there's ours pictures all on the walls and on all the buildings that fish love. If you'd only throw a little bubble on them, 4 or 5 years, maybe Siberia, jail, control, demonstration. Even you weren't allowed three, if you only three or more had to have a permit to come together if you had a meeting, even a party, you'd have a permit.
More than three people?
More than three people. I know in my time, this one fella, his name was Leckert, Hirsch Leckert. I knew him very well. He shot on that Governor General von Weil. See, most the high officers in Russia was all Germans. Most of them. Not all, but most of them.
He was what?
Most Germans. Like von Plever, von Weil, von so-and-so. Even in fact, my brother told me, I had an older brother, he's dead now, he wasn't there, was Tsar's army. Told me he heard two generals when they had manure there, talking German. They were all, most of the hey, big shots were German. But anyhow, that friend of mine, it's a monument on the, there's a monument in White Russia in his name. He shot at this Governor General. He was in over three states. He didn't kill him. He shot him, he was in the circus. And he then, but of course they took him out, didn't they?
He was in the circus?
The general, the governor general, was attending a circus was going on in that town. And this Hirsch Leckert shot at him. Well, of course they made it quick in a few days. They hung him and they, about a couple of company soldiers walked right over it and they even don't know the place. But they put up a monument in another city there, where, in White Russia. But when I look backwards in Russia, it's almost unbelievable. And take China, and take all those countries like Romania, Yugoslavia, well, not Yugoslavia, but Belgrade, you know, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Poland. The bureaucracy was so, just like hundreds and hundreds of years back. And what they accomplished is just unbelievable. Of course, we may be the last country in the world. But I'll never forget in 1929 I remember we had in 1929 before the crisis I remember we had a Lovestone was here and they had a debate and he says, oh, the American capitalists are the strongest in the world. And so one fellow, I can't think of who it was, I think, but he said, United States, he said, is like when you put up a 10-story building, the foundation is weak. One building on one side and one building on the other side keeps it up. But you take away this building is bound to tip over. That was the, I think it was Mossad, I think, said that, if I'm not mistaken. Remember Bill Mossad? I think he said so. But anyhow, the point is this. You know, Soviet Union today, they don't have to, I remember in 1925, one, he was the managing for Hearst paper, I forgot his name, Brisbane, I guess it was.
Brisbane, uh-huh.
He said, in 25 years from now, if the Russians should develop the industry, with the freight alone they can compete with us. In the freight alone, because he said, their president of the railroad doesn't get $250,000 to $300,000.
He said this in 25?
Yes, in 25. And my God, it's coming to it. You know, now I see where the Soviet Union, that's what they're afraid of, you know. The competition is more dangerous to them than all the isms, you know. On the river. Now, I asked one of those delegates, I says, why does I said, that time, I think the Soviet government gave Ford $5 million to put up a factory just like they had here. And I asked him, I said, why does the Soviet government give so much gold to the capitalists? Well, he said, it took Ford that time, he said, 30 years to put up, it's worth to us the $5 million that we don't have to go the process to develop what Ford developed at that time. You see, they knew that they had to go to the capitalists to learn their way, not take this McYoung. He watched everything. He watched. He went in stores, he went in the homes, he went in because he observed, you know, to see when he comes back. He even watched how to make donuts, you know. Yeah. Well, that's what he says. Because maybe one or two persons didn't treat him right or accused him or in a way and look rough like they think then they get pessimistic about the whole thing. When they get old, well, they take a lot of them take the example, for instance, in the 30s during the hard times, during the crisis. Look at how we've thousands and thousands of workers all at once, so long they got a full belly full, they left the whole thing. See, they haven't got the real foundation. I'll say again, I'll never forget that he made a statement. He says, this revolutionary movement is just like when you see a fire broke out in a building. You'll see one fireman jumps on here and one's up there. One of them puts on his boot, one puts his coat, and one of them falls off. One of them jumps off, and one the engine keeps right on it. You'll never forget that statement. And he's one of them, see? He just stepped off. See, after all, half of the world is there. It's a real one. We do a lot of good work. It was a benefit, and also a lot of educational work. They all woke up. The insurance companies took away millions of dollars from the workers. But it'll come back. You know, that reminds me. I used to know a Greek fella downtown. Very intelligent fellow. He used to work in a fruit store. That was in 1910, 11 or 12, before they broke away from Turkey. Greece was just 3 million people. I said, John or Jim, whatever, I said, what happened to Greece? Greece, I said, has such a high civilization thousands of years ago. And look at now, what are they? Practically nothing. He took an apple, he says, we were up, we're done. We'll be up again. You know, he was sensible, you know. So, time is changing. Of course, today they're imperialistic, but still they're a country. There's 7-8 million people and so forth. And we wouldn't have been for the United States. They would have communism, they know. It wouldn't have been for Truman, you know. But mine, see the accomplishment in the world. Even Mikoyan's coming to the United States now. Could we expect that 25, 30 years ago?
After all, Vaz just couldn't stay in the jungle. She's become too much too sophisticated. because she made him the most out of this world offer. She offered him the moon, or just a little place just off the moon.
Come with me to my Emerald Rock Garden, just off the moon, where darkness is only a translucency. Come climb with me to the top of my tree, where the fruit is ripe and the taste is like the sky. Star rubies are budding in my diamond-encrusted hothouse, and the rhythm is melodic, the rhythm is rhapsodic. Come with me. Rhythm.
Rhythm. swinging chick. She drew on all the resources of interplanetary sorcery to get her man, and get him she did. Was, is, and always will be a real swinging chick. You know, why doesn't everybody get a drum? Drum's an awful lot of fun. And say, hey, whose pretty little drum are you?
On May 22nd, the United States Steel Hour goes behind the headlines to bring... Thank you.
David Oistrakh was the violinist. We heard a performance of the Concerto for Violin and Orchestra in D Major, Opus 77, by Johannes Brahms.
Travel time, and it should be February then, for sure. But you never could tell with this one. Knocked round and singing in a fair summer like Sarah had been, but strange, like a sack of rocks. Was that a knee or a hand to shake?
This recording, Franz Konvichny conducts the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra.
Thank you.
Igor Oistrakh was the violinist, and the Gewandhaus Orchestra of Leipzig was under the direction of Franz Konvitschny. We heard the Romance in F Major by Beethoven. This has been the afternoon concert, a full hour of the world's fine music on records, presented at 2:30 Monday through Friday. The featured work on today's broadcast was the Concerto for Violin and Orchestra in D Major by Johannes Brahms, performed by David Oistrakh. If you are interested, this particular performance was in a new release by Decca called An Oistrakh Omnibus, which has three major concertos, the Brahms, the Tchaikovsky,
the hounds, and you could see within the sound their red mouths dripping. All the shadows moved, and she had the feeling of eyes looking at her, and the wind, the shadow, pale. She imagined she could hear the lipping of the spring still unfrozen. Above she felt the avaricious birds flying low, hawk or crow or owl, peering upon crouching catamount, mink or deer, or tiny glass-eyed mice, or hungry rabbits. Who hunted her down? She had a mad, predatory hunger, now keen as that of the animals to smell the warm odor of meat cooking. Cradling the gun, she pushed the door shut and turned into the cold, sinking to her knees. Floundering down the barrels, and she felt the child clutch her and hang to the hungry cliffs of her sides. She felt something following her, and looking back, saw only the cabin, almost dark. The windowless sides without eyes. How could so small a space hold begetting and birth, sorrow, waiting? It seemed to her like herself, a cave's mouth, opening inward to vast spaces of the earth. She turned and went on down a snowy hill, and ahead in the tricky light, she thought she saw many animals around the sinking spring. She stopped to make her cabin eyes focus. She stood in the frosty cold a long time, waiting to see what shadows move. She blended with the swell of the frozen land, and she let the smell of touch of the land come back. She felt then a shadow following her, stopping when she stopped. She felt it behind, along her back, at the hair roots. Thought it was only the secret life around her, the eye of bird, of fox, of rabbit, of nest of coiled snakes, even of chrysalis hanging from a tree. She moved forward, her long dress wet now, but she thought she saw a lean rabbit in the scrub. A rabbit in the pot would send up a savory odor, and there would be a little meat for her picking. The shadow behind her again moved, and the feeling froze her neck and made her back ache. She stopped, the shadow stopped. Far off she could hear the baying of the dogs, now wild upon the chase and kill. The gun hung heavy in her hand, and she felt a moment of utter cold. Then against the sky she saw the head of a doe lift. For a moment she thought it might be an Indian, but then unmistakably she saw the familiar sight of the deer standing on the spring bound, tender butt reared, looking in fright. The shadow behind her moved, streaked like a breath past her. She stood with her mouth open, but did not know if it was herself or the lion that screamed, or the deer. It was a sharp rending of the cold air. The baying hound seemed to swerve and stop, and then the monumental shadows struggled by the spring silently, as in childbirth, with only grunts and strange tearings and terrible tensions, blood and bones. She stood like a tree rooted, her arms outheld, then silent except for a lapping sound. To her horror, the big cat dragged the doe out in the light of the snow. She could see clearly as he opened the carcass, and the bright entrails shone of warm blood spread on the snow.
Where do you come
from? She went into the house. The wave of cabin warmth struck her. She dropped the gun and waved the rabbit. She began a wild singing. And Sarah cried out at the gaiety of her mother. Nancy grabbed her from the bear cover with the small bread in her hand, swung her around the cabin, the ears of the rabbit flying, and outside the awful cry of the catamount. Dance to keep warm. Dance, dance, stir up the fire, skin the rabbit and pop him in our mouths. And to the knocking inside her, yes, yes, hungry mouth. And skinning the rat, the coat off the gentle rabbit, who said nothing and might have been her summer friend, but now fed her winter's hunger. Pardon me, friend, she thought, for all the hunger at the ribs of all of us, baying inside and out, crying out hunger, the fox and the squirrel and the field mice and the bugs and the crickets, all with the beast at our ribs, nipping and howling, are the hunger and the cry of all brothers. Is it you, boy, knocking and splintering my ribs from hunger? You'll have in you the hungers and the haunts and the hounds of the night. The little rabbit dropped for you from the mountain lion's mouth. Ah, you'll have a tough juniper heartbeat. I am strong and you be
come
too.
For to
show me, Mammy. Show me how you're dancing, Sarah cried. So they danced together in the crazy firelight and fell laughing and tickling each other on the bed. And Nancy rode startled, listening for other times. I always liked it when the folks came in winter and the new children, born and unborn, and the fresh milk from the cow, and golden butter, and many kinds of preserves, and five kinds of meat. You waiting for somebody, Mammy? No track to our door now. He'll come up no path that you'll be saying. I'll wait till February. I'll get my food or a catamount will bring it. Tomorrow there'll be some of the door left. You looking for somebody, Mammy, to come? I'm looking for somebody, but he ain't coming through that door. He'll come up no path you'll be seeing. Not up that path or through that door. They sat and the kind rabbit in the pot between and ate and sucked the little bones. And the child fell over in a sleep. And Nancy covered her and wrapped herself beside the fire. But your mom now must die down to save wood. Tomorrow she would find the stumps under the snow. Swing the axe, bring in the logs. She settled down with a friend coming to her in the wilderness. You're going to be mighty thin and swampy, but living tough and strong. I'll have plenty for you, Abe. Larning and books. You're gonna be a tall, raw-boned hunter swamp baby, made of too much rabbit meat, lean and lonesome, but sweet as a pawpaw. You're gonna be my loneliness made tall, my hunger walking, a friend.
Testing. Testing. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Slash new paths for you to travel. Derision beating like hail upon her face. And you, my son,
Give thanks that you shall know because of her a comradeship our fathers never knew, because no man is comrade to a slave. She was no smiling Madonna, the sweet and self-effacing portrait of a woman, painted so many centuries by countless men. She was fierce as a bird is fierce that has to fly over high and lonely crags. With angry claws she tore at prejudice and scorn, and swooped like a hawk on all who'd rob her children of their new-won heights. Lay a flower upon her sleeping hair, my daughter, for all her heartache and her lonely pain, for all her sweetness, hammered to pointed steel to better battle for your womanhood and mine. Lay a flower upon her sleeping hair and cherish her as you cherish the sea and mountains that climb the sky.
History is like a long chain which can be controlled link by link. If only one knows History is like a long chain which can be controlled link by link. If only one knows which link to grasp at which particular moment. The link always presents itself in the actual problems at hand, never in the future. Amen, Brother Ben, shot a rooster and kill a hen.
Hello. Testing. Hello. Speak to me, Caledonia. How does it read loud and clear?